Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Morning, Bears fans. Let's go to work.
Steve Rosenblum. It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Yeah, well, Bears fans, go to work. Maybe a work release program. That seems to be what the voice you heard, Ryan Poles, GM, is assembling here. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're going to discuss the Bears now. We're going to the Score Hotline. Guests, join us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And my guest, back again, because he's lovely and talented and wonderful, Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mark, how you doing?
And available.
And available. Sure, he's available. That's it. And a man who helps create revenue streams. You may not have realized it last night, but or earlier. I just love what your idea. We will talk about your baseball idea first, and we will come up with some revenue streams. But first, on the 4th of July, wide receiver David Moore, Bears wide receiver David Moore, was arrested on drug and weapon charges. Hello! He's the third criminal the Bears have signed. That was Ryan Poles' signing. Bears' new GM loves himself some criminals, doesn't he? Has Ryan Poles commented on this or any of the arrests of the men that he has signed?
He did comment on the Byron Pringle arrest, and of course he knew him from Kansas City and vouched for his character. Pringle since had a really shaky press conference when he was asked about it, so that was not a great sign. But the others have been so recent that all they've done is acknowledge that they are aware of the arrests, and that's it. So that's where we stand.
It's disturbing when you see them one pop up after another. You're signing criminals. I don't know what this is supposed to tell you about the Bears. Am I supposed to read something into this? Is this, I guess, if you were being charitable, you say this is just a run of bad luck. If you were being critical, like I see this as a rookie GM doing a horrible job of character assessment, and that goes for him and his entire staff. And to me, this ties into the firing of Soup Campbell, the director of player engagement. Did he get fired because he was supposed to wrangle the criminals Ryan Poles was signing? I'm trying to tie all this together. Maybe I shouldn't. What do you think, Mark?
Well, that's another thing we need to find out, I guess, or need to ask when training camp ensues, is, you know, if there was what the connection was there and what the responsibilities are of that player. But I'll be honest, Steve, I really don't have that same take as you on that. I don't paint with the broad brush of calling of all criminality. To be honest, in the context of sports and the tolerance that teams have for things like this, this does not go over the line, frankly, of the sexual assault, domestic violence, you know, trying to become a drug kingpin like Sam Hurd type of offenses. And frankly, these are just within the realm of what a team like the Kansas City Chiefs have done with Frank Clark and with Tyreek Hill and have built a Super Bowl team and won it and gone on their merry way. And I think the Bears are just right now with these three, if you look at the individual situations and what the arrests are actually for, this falls into what I think teams would consider an acceptable, if I know it's a bad way to put it, but this is the way sports is, that they will accept this based on the return they get in performance. So if it's somebody who doesn't perform, these are two of these, at least these are, well, I can't say fringe guys. David Moore's probably a fringe guy. You know, his leash is shorter. Byron Pringle's going to be on the team. Matt Adams, I assume, will also be on the team based on what we know about the history of these types of things. So I'll be honest. My head is not spinning. I'm not blowing up over this. I think they're going to address it, but I don't think they're going to. I don't think this taints the Bears and pulls as much as you think at this point. Now, we'll see what the future holds, but right now, based on that, and relative to the criminality we've seen in the NFL, this is, I dare say, mild.
You're right. I'm not arguing that. The fact that it spiked the way it has, and tied in with other missteps that the rookie GM has made, and I may be making a big blanket assessment of him, but I didn't want to see a rookie GM make rookie mistakes. And there was the Ogunjobi, the Ryan Bates, the where are you on this? And yet I thought, okay, it flattened out. And it may be on the rise when he took two defensive players. They were the best on the board. I love the idea of the positions he took, the reasons he took those players. And I thought that was trending well. That's a team that if these guys get takeaways, then even an offense that hasn't been addressed the way it needs to be addressed can be put in position to play better. I'm all in favor of that. And then all of a sudden, the new guys that he signed are they going to be able to post bail? Why is it this way? And then, like you said, Pringle had a bad-looking, bad image, bad take on the press conference. So I guess I'm looking at it as a rookie GM making rookie mistakes, and he's got a rookie head coach. And I want to think that it could be a little more positive. So it disturbs me that this could be a distraction, and I don't think this is an organization in any way talented enough to have distractions. Or do you think it won't be a distraction? They're going to move past this by the time
training camp. Will be a distraction. He's had a couple things, the firing of Soup Campbell. That is curious, the timing of it, all that. But again, that's something that has that great of an effect to us anyway. In the locker room, that remains to be seen. But they don't have the type of locker room where something like that, you can't really lose a locker room where you don't have that much status. You know, it's not like Matt Forte and Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs are in this locker room. Your highest stature guy is like Roquan Smith, you know. So even that situation, you know, the Soup Campbell firing, the timing is curious, and what precipitated that is obviously a good question. But, Larry Ogunjobi agreeing to sign him and then not being able to sign him, again, that's not a great look, but, I don't know what homework they are expected to do or supposed to do, to be honest, to find out exactly if that could have been avoided. I don't know, but I'll be honest, Steve, and I'm usually as cynical as you are, but I see in the big picture, I'm still bullish on Ryan Poles, and I think there are more signs that if he has success, he will be able to sustain it more than previous general managers, just based on what I've seen. And if you think about it, most coaches and GMs, the Bears have had success early and then fade out as they kind of get enveloped by Hallis Hall dysfunction. So a guy who makes his mistakes early and learns from them, I think that guy actually has a better chance to succeed. And maybe that's, seeing it through Bears-colored glasses, I guess you could criticize me for. But I just think, looking at the big picture, having seen all of these regimes over the last 25, 30 years, this to me is not as disconcerting. This is not as disconcerting to me as it is to other critics of the Bears.
I can see that, and we've seen that having success. If you're Matt Nagy and then you're all of a sudden a steep decline, I'd rather have it the other way. I'd rather have it everything pointing up and progress being made so that there's a threat of sustained success. I'd rather see that. Now, whether that when that starts, I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. Would you have any idea? Do you have a feeling of when you'd feel good, when you'd feel confident, when you'd feel that there's an adult in the room?
Well, there's one thing we have to see this year, and that's the development of the quarterback in the offense. I think that's the key for 2022. And then if that happens, they are set up to be contenders for the playoffs in 2023 with the cap space they'll have, with the second-year players that should also develop, the second- and third-year players that he inherited that should develop. This is not a Blackhawks type of rebuild. I think it would help if they got a top-five pick out of this year. I think that is a key to success when you are rebuilding. So I think they have to have the right kind of losing year where they lose games and they still develop their quarterback. And then next year is when the clock starts on Ryan Poles, because he has cleared the way. He has done something that no other GM has done. He's got a fresh new franchise quarterback to develop. He has very little inherited talent except for Robert Quinn. That is kind of that he has to work around. Like, you know, I think Pace had Jared Allen, I think it was in 2015, you know, that kind of thing. He has a clear, you know, this is scorched earth relative to other rebuilds, and he has a clear path to next year. And I think Bears fans will be fine with that, because I think it's pretty clear, with the exception of him just not being able to say the word rebuild, I think it's clear where he's headed. So like I said, to answer your question in a long-winded way, the clock starts on Ryan Poles next year, unless the quarterback blows up on him this year and the offense does. And then you've got a bigger problem.
My guest is Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times, covers the Bears, and also watches baseball. Mark, I think whether you knew it or not, your tweet the other night sparked me to think that you're creating a revenue stream. So let me go over this with you. Let me share with our class.
I have no idea
first.
What you're talking about. Let me just say that right off the bat.
I know, and so I'm going to read to you and the class a Mark Potash tweet. You can follow him on Twitter, and I advise you to, at Mark Potash. I'm all for the robot umps, just so the announcers will stop criticizing every borderline pitch that doesn't go their way. I'd rather hear another in-game sponsor read than that. And I'm thinking, Mark, you're brilliant. You're magic. The Sox, for instance, are missing a revenue stream. Another missed call, but you'll never miss a call with T-Mobile's new call alert with speakers that go to 11. They're missing a sponsorship of blown calls. I don't know if you thought of this, but I wanted to share it with you. If you wanted to go after a way to create a sponsorship for blown calls, because indeed, announcers do their fair share of whining about pitches outside or inside or on the rectangle lines of that box.
Well, I hadn't thought of it, but now that you're bringing it up, you know, they could get like the Zenni account. They're the eyeglass people for the actual umps. I think that would be a good connection. But yeah, there is. I guess you could say that, but. You know, if they sponsor the bad calls, that would be just as that wouldn't be helping the situation. I just, you know, yeah, I root for the Sox. I like to see them win, and I like their announcing team. But man, they are just obsessed with the box. And I don't even know. Does anyone know who sets the box on the TV screen when you see it? Because the pitches, I just don't get that. I don't get that whole thing. I guess what I'm saying, I want it to stop. I don't think I'm alone in this. I just want it to stop. And so I'm an old school guy, but yeah, I will totally go for the robot umps just to eliminate that, because I guess I'm easily annoyed at my age. I'm guilty as charged on that.
Welcome to the cranky club. Well, I'm happy to have a new member. I'm in favor of it. I love this idea. They should sponsor it. You're right. You shouldn't try to encourage this kind of whining, but they're going to do it anyways. There's no way to avoid it as long as there are human umps. At least the robot umps, you know, the strike zone is going to be set, and it's going to be a little lower and probably a little wider, and everybody will have problems with it. But you might as well try to make some money off it in the meantime. I think you need to do something
let me say this also, Steve. Steve Stone should know this. Umps have not been calling the high strike since I was in high school, and I'm 63 years old. I mean, that pitch that is actually on the box, on the top line of the box, and is technically a strike, in the real world, I mean, you've watched baseball for many years. I mean, that has not been a strike since the 60s, I think. And so to complain about that, I mean, just the complaint should be, let's get the robot umps. Just stop complaining about the actual umpires, because they're basically as no worse or better, I guess, than they've been for years and years. We just have this box, this, you know, whatever you call it, that shows them where the so-called mistakes are. So anyway, I guess that's my point, is that all the borderline calls are borderline calls. With human umps, I don't even consider those misses. You know, swing the bat.
There you go. This is borderline call brought to you by the U.S. Border Patrol. There's all kinds of sponsorships available. Mark, you're a genius. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times, talking Bears, and the money-making opportunity. Brooks Boyer, get that on there. NBC Sports Chicago, get that on there. Get those blown calls. Missed calls. Yeah, you'll never miss another call again with our phone call alert. Okay, we'll take a break. Later this hour, we'll talk Bulls Summer League with someone who's out at the Bulls Summer League. We'll find out about Dalen Terry and what all went on when they made their debut, that Bulls Summer League team. But first, it's been a really tough run for the mob. A really tough run for actors who portray mob figures. So we're going to take a look at that. Someone who played a legendary mobster and a bear after whom there is an award named, and one of the greatest movies of all time. So we'll talk about James Caan after this. Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Steve Rosenblum, it's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
This is a story about two men. They competed for the same job. One was white, the other black. One liked to talk a lot.
You said, uh-huh.
The other was shy as a three-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Hey, rookies gotta stick together.
Our story is about how they came to know each other, fight each other.
I'm gonna whip you, Sayers. But you gotta be at your best.
And help each other.
I think I owe you a beer.
How are you? A lot more than that.
James Caan is like legendarily, he was Sonny. He was Sonny Corleone. But in Chicago, he resounds as Brian Piccolo. Brian Piccolo was the player to whom, there's still a Brian Piccolo, the Bears hand out a Brian Piccolo award. They remember him. And the story was, as the trailer said, two running backs competing for the same job, one white, one black, and roommates. There's a wonderful acting of James Caan and Billy Dee Williams, who portrayed Gale Sayers, in the dorm room during training camp, if I have this right. It's been a while since I've seen it, because I choose not to cry. But the Brian Piccolo role by James Caan, he's reading a letter filled with racist hatred. Basically, how could you as a white man live with, and it just goes on and on, and it's mean and horrible and racist and depraved and sick. And James Caan stops reading, and Gale Sayers says, anything else? And then Brian Piccolo says, yeah, just the usual, love and kiss his mom. And it's a wonderful moment there, a great bit of screenwriting. And the passing of Gale Sayers 2 years ago, a little less than 2 years ago, brought more different attention on that relationship. And the Boston Globe had contacted James Caan, talking about that relation, the real relationship, and then the one he had with Billy Dee Williams playing Gale Sayers. And in the story, James Caan told the Globe he was a blessing to the planet Earth. Everybody cries when they see it. I cry every time I see it. Caan went on, I grew up with really strong relationships, and my friends were real, and my friends still are. Friends were the only things we had, and their relationship was pretty genuine and pretty great. He's talking about Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers. By the way, I didn't know this till I read this story. This is from Touchdown Wire, USA Today. Billy Dee Williams wonderfully gives the most wonderful speech in a football movie, arguably. I love Brian Piccolo. I want you to love him too. And all the tears are flowing then. Billy Dee Williams almost didn't have the role of Gale Sayers. In fact, he didn't. The original casting for that movie was Louis Gossett Jr. You might remember him from Officer and a Gentleman. Louis Gossett Jr. tore his Achilles before filming, and Billy Dee Williams was given the role and given such star treatment. Lando Calrissian as Gale Sayers. And it was that's James Caan. And he was had such a fascinating career, James Caan did, when you're talking about Brian Piccolo and more famously Sonny Corleone, and more imaginatively being held captive by Kathy Bates as an author in Stephen King's Misery, and he's chained to a bed. And he was wonderful. And he was a great follow on Twitter. I don't know how many of you might have followed James Caan. He had a Twitter. Somebody was writing it. And most recently, he had tweeted, or somebody on his account tweeted, before you criticize someone, walk a mile in their shoes. That way, when you do criticize them, you're a mile away and you have their shoes. End of tweet. Also, don't go through toll booths. And the other recent tweet from James Caan from his Twitter account was a picture. If you remember in Godfather 2, Godfather, when Sollozzo comes to meet in the offices, and there's all of Don Vito Corleone's group, his oldest son Santino and Fredo and Tom Hagen and Fat Clemenza, and they're all meeting with Sollozzo, and he wants to convince the Don to get a part of the drug business. And James Caan tweeted that picture, and just with the caption, squad goals. I love that. I love it. I can't remember how old I was, but it was many years after Sonny got blown up at the toll booth that I found out that James Caan was Jewish. I mean, he's Sonny Corleone with a famous Italian temper, and bada bing, bada boom, little college boy gets smacked around, and now you want to shoot, or you want to kill a New York police captain. Don't take it so poisonally. Well, it turns out Sonny Corleone was Jewish. And I had heard this story later on when James Caan was in the movie, in the television show Las Vegas. So he's the patriarch of that casino owning family, Josh Duhamel, and I can't remember who played the female lead. But of course, in you're filming in Las Vegas. It's called Las Vegas. You have all manner of the casino. So eventually, they did a poker scene or episode that featured poker players and real poker players. And one of them, and I was writing a syndicated poker column at the time, and I was writing for ESPN, and so I had a wonderful relationship with a lot of the poker players, and one of whom was Howard Lederer, who is half Jewish. And Howard Lederer and Eric Lindgren, I want to say, were among the actors, or among the poker players on this episode. And the Full Tilt site that they were a part of also featured Mike Matisow. You may or may not remember Mike Matisow. He was explosive. He could go nuts on you. He had a famous scene in Greg Raymer's winning the world championship, the main event, the bracelet for the main event. And Mike Matisow could go off at any time. He famously went off at the final table, when he went to the final table when the year Joe Hatcham won, when he had the chip lead and his kings lost to aces, and it was just bonkers. He just went nuts. And Mike Matisow was Jewish, and Mike Matisow would wear a gold mezuzah a chai hanging around his neck. And my mom, who never played poker but understood gambling, would call me and tell me, he said, I don't want him wearing the mezuzah. I don't like that he's acting the way he's acting. And I thought, this is just my Jewish mother doing what she does. So it turns out, on the set of Las Vegas, they filmed these scenes, and then James Caan calls over Howard Lederer, said, Howard, tell your boy Matisow the tribe is not happy with him. I love that story. James Caan, as real as it gets. And a sad day for Spartans. He was at Michigan State. He was there at Michigan State. He's a Spartan and supported them, would show up for the MSU Michigan games. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful career. And a tough day for the mob.
Did you like him in Elf, Steve? He was pretty good in Elf as well.
Elf, I did not see.
Yeah, he was really funny. I think, honestly, for a lot of younger movie watchers, that was really their introduction to him. They really didn't know who he was until Elf. So I think for a lot of younger people, they really got to know him through the movie Elf.
Really? I hadn't thought of that. That was such a... I didn't see it. I knew it was a Will Ferrell creation thing, starring role, all that kind of stuff. Who was James Caan? What was his role in that?
He played Will Ferrell's character, who was Elf. It was his father that he did not know. James Caan did not know that he had a son who wound up being the Elf, Will Ferrell, coming down from the North Pole. So you can imagine it was pretty funny parts involving him.
Merriment and hijinks ensue. Okay. All right. Well, I what was your introduction to James Caan? Was it Elf? Is that how you figured out who he was? You didn't know he was Sonny at the toll booth?
Oh no, I'm a big gangster movie guy. I've seen Godfather about 100 times, right? So I know I knew him since then for sure.
Okay. Bada bing, bada boom. Well, we got other gangsters to talk about later. In the meantime, we're gonna go back to Las Vegas. We're gonna talk some Bulls Summer League with Matt Peck of CHGO. Or how are we pronouncing that? I don't know.
CHGO.
Not CHGO. CHGO. That's what we're saying. That's the way it is, huh? Okay. That's what we're going to do. Thank you, Caesar. We're going to talk some Bulls Summer League. Dalen Terry showed up, and Marco Simonovic showed up, and we'll see what they showed. Next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, like I said before, I feel great, you know, and I think I feel more comfortable than last year, and I think I made some improvements like from the beginning, you know, of the last year, and just keep going, just keep working and keep winning.
Steve Rosenblum, it's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Marco Simonovic talking about Summer League, talking about the Bulls, where he is, with whom he's playing. We are Saturday Suckage on the Score. We are going to go to the guest hotline. Our guests are brought to you on the Score hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome to the show from CHGO, Matt Peck. Matt, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing good. We were just talking about Sonny Corleone and James Caan playing in Las Vegas, and now the Bulls are playing in Las Vegas. So they played, they started. Share with the class what happened and what you thought.
Well, the Bulls got down big in the first half, mostly because they couldn't hit a three. They responded. They came out in the second half with a little bit more energy, and they picked things up on the defensive end. Marko Simonovic was clearly the front runner who bounced back of a mediocre first half. He had a few quick buckets right out of the gate and then was quiet, and then just kind of took over down the stretch, had several big plays that helped the Bulls bring it back and force overtime, and then two really big winning plays in overtime to secure the victory for the Bulls. Bulls fans are excited about what this might mean for a guy who came from overseas as a draft and stash last year and pretty much spent the entire season with Windy City. Everyone's wondering now if any of these summer league performances might indicate if he's ready to actually get into Billy Donovan's rotation this season. So it's just one summer league game, right? That's what you always have to say.
Right, yeah, that was the Casey Johnson has it on Save Getty has it on a function key where you automatically, it's like cut and paste. He's got it saved.
Right.
It's only summer league, but, and then you go from there. So the fact that he says he feels more comfortable, and 27 points and 12 rebounds would suggest that he certainly felt comfortable last night, is a good sign. Now, is there any threat he can block a shot, protect the rim, dissuade an opponent from getting near the backboard?
Well, he did get credited with three blocks in their game yesterday, so you like to see
wait,
that.
Wait, Matt. Get credited? Did he actually block them or not? What is this get credited?
I definitely saw at least two of them. I don't remember the third, but yeah, he was able to block a few shots yesterday. The encouraging thing is, as we've seen, and he spoke about it in one of their practices leading up to Summer League, is that he put in work in the weight room since coming over and playing with Windy City last season. He's up from 215 to 240. You notice the difference in his build, and there's certainly still questions about his ability to be a real rim protector at the NBA level and not just Summer League or G League, but the way that you saw him finishing through contact and playing with his body offensively in yesterday's game gives you a little bit of optimism that he can actually maybe be a rim protector at some point. Because, you know, one of the biggest plays of the game was an and one where he absorbed the contact and finished strong. So there's definitely more muscle on his frame. And, footwork on the defensive end still remains a big question mark.
My guest is Matt Peck from CHGO. You can follow him on Twitter at @Bulls_Peck. And we're talking about the Bulls' Summer League debut, and they spent their first-round pick, Dalen Terry. What did you see? What did you think? What's good? What's bad?
Well, the first thing you notice is activity and his voice on the defensive end. That's the first thing that their Summer League coach, John Bryant, mentioned when he was asked about his first impressions of Dalen Terry in practice this past week. And you saw it in their first game. He's got active hands. He's already pretty good at fighting through and over screens. He had a few solid defensive possessions. Offensively, there's still plenty of work to do. His handle needs a lot of work. He actually had six turnovers yesterday. You like to see that because it means he was trying to be aggressive, and he did have some beautiful assists. I think he finished with six dimes, and some of them were, gorgeous Lonzo Ball-esque kind of passes, displaying his court vision. So the handle needs to get a little bit better. He probably needs to add a little bit of strength because the combination of his loose handles and his lack of strength kind of caused a lot of those turnovers where he was just pushing too hard and had nowhere to go, couldn't beat his man off the dribble. But a lot of those intangibles are there, the length of the activity on the defensive end and what he can do using his court vision on the offensive end.
One of the things a guy like that, that kind of energy, that kind of production can spark a rest of a lineup doing that. Or in summer league, when you're all trying to make a name for yourself, you might see guys standing around. You might see guys getting a little grumpy because, wow, he's hogging the ball. He's hogging the spotlight. When do we get to play? And I think John Bryant's got that's an interesting balance. I don't know if he's talked about that, but but the idea of what Dalen Terry brings to this team and then what he'll bring to the adults when the Bulls play, how do you think that plays out?
That's a great question. One of the other things that John Bryant said when he was giving his first impressions of Dalen Terry is that he, out of the gate, is the type of player who was doing things in their practice scrimmages not to showcase his own talents, but to help his teammates and to make his teammates look good. And for a rookie who came in, you know, middle of the first round, plenty to prove, drafted to a big market team that went to the playoffs last year and is trying to take another step, as you said, there are plenty of players in this league and making their way into this league who would use summer league as an opportunity to showcase what they can do. Dalen Terry, through the first week of summer league practice and in yesterday's game, was all about helping his teammates and making them better. And I think that's a quality that, that John Bryant and AK and Eversley all really love about this guy.
I love the fact that he's so quotable and so real and so guileless, because there just doesn't seem to be a filter there. And going back to draft night, or shortly thereafter, when he was talking about improving his shooting, and he likened his growth to building a player, building up a player, shaping a player in NBA 2K. So he wants to go from being a 75 to a 99 and says, I'm good at some things, but I'm not great at nothing. I'm trying to get great at everything. I love that. I love him. I don't know what he had to say, what you were able to get last night after his summer league debut, but I'm interested to know. I want to hear this continue. What did he have to say, or how was he last night?
Yeah, I mean, the 2K comparison is funny, and that's always the bottom line, right? It's only NBA player skills are only real if NBA 2K recognizes them. But, I mean, truly, I think that that's what AK and Eversley and Billy Donovan saw in Terry, is that he's already going to come into the NBA level being good at a lot of things, as opposed to, you know, maybe somebody who's a pure scorer who needs a lot of work in every other element of his game. And that's, I mean, you saw it from him yesterday. He did a little bit of everything. He rebounded. He passed the ball. You know, a very modest 3-for-7 shooting from the floor. But again, that was because he's coming into this with an approach of, I want to be a guy who gets my teammates looks, and, you know, I'll take my looks when they're there. But it very much sounds like for him, it's about defense and it's about team ball on the offensive end. And AK and Eversley seem to have a liking for guys who are just sort of all over the floor players as the NBA continues to transition into, you know, quote unquote, positionless basketball. This guy, with several other players on the Bulls roster, whether you're talking Lonzo, Alex Caruso, can play multiple positions. And Dalen Terry looks like a guy who can be very good at multiple positions in the NBA.
My guest is Matt Peck of CHGO. We're talking Bulls basketball, Bulls Summer League. So Simanovic and Terry were the easy places to start with. And I know it's only one game, and I know it's only summer league, and I know everybody wants to get back to the tables and their free drinks and everything else. But who else should Bulls fans keep an eye on? What names can they expect to hear on a regular basis based on what you saw last night?
Well, if there's a third name that people are focusing on this week in summer league, it's definitely the Marquette product, Justin, who had a very, very solid game yesterday. People are wondering if he can be a solid four in the NBA, kind of as a 6'7" guy who's got a lot of muscle. He's willing to take shots. He didn't knock down either of his 3-point attempts yesterday, but there's one incredible defensive possession he had where he just sized up Jaden Hardy one-on-one, and Hardy was getting buckets all through that game. I think he finished with 28, but Lewis was able to D him up a few times throughout the course of the game. So he got signed to one of the Bulls' two-way contracts, so maybe you'll see him splitting time with Windy City. Maybe he'll get called up at some point this next season if the Bulls find themselves shorthanded as they did last season. But for a just sort of a flyer on an undrafted free agent who had a really strong second season at Marquette, there's a lot to like about him.
Before I let you go, Matt, I appreciate your live report actually being alive in Las Vegas today. So it's quite the accomplishment. Thank you. And the question about the team, the real Chicago Bulls, and it would appear two things seem to be, you can disabuse me of this or you can explain it to me. Arturis Karnishovas, however you like, preaches continuity because he's out of ideas, out of money, out of draft capital, and he's filled only with the hope that Lonzo Ball can stay healthy. That appears to be where they are. Without that roster is not going to change dramatically. It apparently can't at this point, whatever middle-level exemption there's going to be or they're going to pay if they decide to go that route. That could that isn't going to alter the face of it much. So what you saw them running it back is simply a default setting, is it not? Or is there something more? Am I missing something here?
I don't think you're missing anything. That's certainly what it looks like right now. And you know, if Bulls fans took Arturis at his word when he was fielding questions and talking to media as the Bulls were making their exit from the playoffs and into their off-season months, he was talking about continuity. He said the same thing when they didn't make any splash moves at last season's trade deadline, saying, we like what we have. We were playing exactly the style of basketball that we want to be playing. And, you know, before Lonzo and Caruso went down, yeah, some people will point to the fact that their record against the other elite teams in the East was poor, to put it gently, but they still had, a share of the one seed coming into the All-Star break. They were the top seed or close to it in the entire Eastern Conference for the first two-thirds of the season with this group. So much hangs on Lonzo's availability and health to play the bulk of 82 games this upcoming season. For what it's worth, my guy Big Dave ran into him when we were at the stadium yesterday, and he just said a quick what's up to Lonzo and said, hey, man, you good? And Lonzo said, yeah, I'm good. So maybe that means his knee is fine. But, Bulls fans hanging on pins and needles because other than a couple of fringe moves, like I guess Drummond is a slight improvement over Tony Bradley. Maybe Goran Dragic as a vet backup guard has a little bit left in the tank, although he certainly looked washed last year. And I think Bulls fans have a right to be questioning not AK and Eversley, because by my view, they are very purposefully just under the tax line right now with these very modest moves in free agency. And nothing they did really moves the needle. And, you have to think back to when Michael Reinsdorf said in the middle of last season on the record, yeah, absolutely. Look around the league. If you want to be a championship contender, you got to pay the luxury tax, and said that he was willing to do so if the Bulls were headed in that direction. Well, if he's seeing a six seed and a first round exit as not quite championship contention and therefore instructed AK and Eversley to stay under the tax this season, the way you get that next step of championship contention from going to good to really good is by paying people, by paying talent to come play and paying your share of the luxury tax. That looks like what's going on right now is that they're ducking it, and I understand Bulls fans are frustrated about that, because if they do just run this group back, even if healthy, you know, maybe a second-round exit instead of a first-round exit, but that's about it as far as I see.
The important most – I thought Lonzo Ball's injury showed he was an MVP candidate, where they were with him, where they were without him. He should have gotten MVP votes just based on not playing. And the idea that he's going to stay healthy when he has never stayed healthy and is so critical, as you said, between him and Caruso, somebody's got to play defense. And these guys are throwing their bodies around the way they were, which created the injuries. I just think that's a really hard go, a hard belief for Bulls fans to say, we got better, and you watch the rest of the East, everybody in the East got better. It's scary now, don't you think?
It very much is. You're right to point out the importance of Lonzo. You know, when he was out there along with Caruso, the Bulls were a very strong perimeter defense team. And then all of a sudden, they weren't. They were terrible. And the other thing that they really missed was Lonzo's volume and efficiency behind the three-point line. The Bulls were the lowest volume three-point shooting team in the NBA last season. And nobody could hit a shot. You saw that play out in their first-round series against the Bucks. The Bucks dared them to shoot threes. And the Bulls basically had no other choice but to shoot those threes, and nobody could hit them. So, Lonzo is vitally important. And if he's not all the way right for this next season, I think you're going to see a middling team. Because as you pointed out, there's really nothing else different about this roster from last year to this year.
Except that you got to go to Vegas. So, Matt Peck, we appreciate you taking time away from the distraction that it is. You rhinestone cowboy, you. Appreciate your time.
Of course.
Matt. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on. Look forward to having you again.
Hit 23 playing MJ's number on roulette last night, so I'm feeling good.
Look at that. You know, all right. Sometime Mike Mulligan will tell you that story. There's a whole bunch of MJ money stories going on. So we'll save that for another broadcast. Thanks. Appreciate it, Matt. All right.
Thank you.
All right, Matt Peck of CHGO. A lot of fun. That's good. There's your Bulls Summer League report. It's only Summer League, but it's Summer League, and it's something to talk about. We'll take a break. When we come back, well, we're collapsing leagues here. It's going to be the Big Ten, which is going to be about 25 teams. It's going to be the SEC, which is everything else that is of interest. And this is the way the NCAA dies an ugly death. They take all of the NCAA is standing there like the Black Knight in Monty Python. It's just a flesh wound. And meanwhile, you're quadriplegic. And that's the way the NCAA will be left and deserves to be left. But there's one question out there about whither Notre Dame. We'll talk to Pete Futak, College Football News, about that and everything else that just happened. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.